can tell how much time I've been talking for too. Oh, hey everybody, my name is Paco. I am the high school pastor here, and I am the other bearded Hispanic guy here. So maybe you guys think I'm Sander, but I'm not. I'm Paco. Sander taught last week, and we are teaching through the entire book of Ruth in two different sermons, and he gave me the awkward chapters. So we're going to look at chapters 3 and 4 today. I'd love to pray just kind of before I teach, because I get nervous and all those kinds of things. And so I'd love to pray, just kind of invite the Lord to kind of speak to me and speak to all of us. Let me pray. Father, thanks for the opportunity to gather this evening. Thanks that you are present with us, Lord. Thanks for your word. We ask that you would just open our hearts and open our minds to receive whatever it is that you want to just teach us tonight through Ruth and looking at her story of how you redeemed her through Boaz, God. And so, Father, just speak to us. Make yourself more known to us, Lord, and be glorified in these next few minutes. Pray so in Jesus' name. Amen. So on December 19th of this last year, I received a phone call. And I remember it very vividly. It was from my nephew's mom, or I guess it'd be my, I don't know the term, but other than like my brother's baby's mama. And she sounded really scattered and stressed. It was kind of a weird thing that she had called me in the first place. I never get phone calls from her. I never have gotten a phone call from her. This is kind of the first time. And all she kept saying was, "I messed up." And I'm like, I don't actually know what that means. Can you just tell me what's going on? And, you know, after, you know, a minute or so, she finally let it out and said that she had messed up and that CPS, which is Child Protection Services, had been called on her and that they were removing my nephew from her care. I was surprised to hear that, especially in that moment. I was about to head over here to go to the Winter Lodge for the All Church Skate, but she said that a relative needed to come by that evening to take him instead of him being placed into some sort of stranger's house for foster care for emergency. And so I headed straight over there and had a couple of conversations, first with the police and then next with a few social workers, and it was just kind of this crazy, chaotic night. I brought him home. And just kind of made sure he was okay. And the next day, literally like 24 hours later, my wife Becca and I, who's here, we're sitting at our kitchen table with the social worker, signing papers to become his foster parent. And so 24 hours later of this whole spiel, we became his foster parents. And so when I think about that story, which is my real life story and currently is right now, when we're in the midst of that, it's to me, and maybe to you hopefully, sounds a little bit like a tragedy, right? We got this 11-year-old kid who did nothing wrong, and his mom has gotten to a place in her life where she's unable to provide a safe environment for him to be at, and so he had to be removed and pulled away from his mom because she was not able to do that for him. And it's a tragic story. And in unfortunate circumstances, and changes a whole lot of stuff for my wife and I, going from having no kids to now an 11-year-old, and we're like, what is going on here? I thought I left middle school ministry behind me. But I tell that story again because sometimes things like that happen. You know, tragedies happen in life. And Becca and I are taking this tragedy, taking this hard circumstance, and being hopeful and trusting that God is going to use this for not only our good, but his glory as well. And the fact that we think that hopefully, and we're trusting that he may even do countless other things kind of in response to this circumstance. I think today, as we continue looking at the story in Ruth, we're going to see that God is taking this really unfortunate circumstance that Ruth and Naomi are in, this tragedy that they're in, and he's going to change this tragedy into a blessing. He's going to change this tragedy into a triumph. And that's something that blesses not only them, but countless other people. Again, chapters 3 and 4, just a quick little recap of where we are in the story of Ruth. Again, the story starts with a famine. There is this big famine that happens. We learn about that in chapter 1. And it's so severe that this man, Elimelech, decides that he's going to move his whole family out of Judah. He's going to leave Bethlehem. He's going to go to this neighboring country called Moab. He's going to move his whole family. It's his wife, Naomi, his two sons, Malone and Chilion. And so they move to Moab, which is a place where God's people really aren't supposed to be. I mean, the nation of Moab is not a godly place. It didn't start really in the best of manners. It was a man, Lot, who had a lot of problems, and his kids, or his two daughters, actually got him drunk, and that's how drunken conceived, and that's how this nation formed. And so not great beginnings for this nation. So it was really not a godly nation. They served other gods. They worshiped other gods. But the famine was so severe, he decides he's going to move his family there. And once more, his sons, they marry Moabite women. So they take Moabite women as their wives. And 10 years after being there, this tragedy strikes the whole family. And those three men die. The husband of Naomi, Elimelech, and the two sons die. So now we have Naomi and her two daughters, or daughters-in-law, who are left widowless and with no real way to provide for themselves. And so Naomi gets word or hears that God has provided relief for the nation of Israel. It most likely brought rain to end this famine. And so she decides in herself that she's going to head back. And along the way, she speaks to her daughters-in-law and says to them to go back. Don't come with me anymore. There's nothing left for you. I have no hope for myself, let alone hope for you. Please head back to your country with your people, and hopefully you can find a husband there. One of the daughters takes up that offer, and she heads back. Her name is Orpah. And Ruth, the second daughter, decides, no, I am not going to leave your side. I am going to go with you. She has this awesome little speech that she does, and she says to Naomi, where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. And this is important. It only shows like her faithfulness to Naomi, but it also shows that she is shifting her trust now into the God of Israel, into God. She says, your God will be my God. I will trust in your God. And so these two women resolve to take their bad circumstances and to do life together. They're going to head back to Judah together. Both, however, with different attitudes. Naomi has a little bit of a bitter attitude, so bitter that when she gets to Bethlehem, she's like, don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara, because that means bitter, and I am bitter, and the Lord has been bitter with me. Now, Naomi, or Ruth, on the other hand, has this kind of newfound hope, this new life. She's heading to this new place. He says, I'm going to trust in this God. I'm going to make your people my people. She's a bit more hopeful in her like kind of posture towards this whole change. However, this whole story kind of shifts a little bit in chapter 2. And Naomi's kind of attitude shifts a little bit in chapter 2, where she finds out about this guy Boaz, whom Ruth has been working in the fields of. She's been gleaning in the fields. And she finds hope in this Boaz because she knows that Boaz is a relative. And she says about this guy that he is a close relative and he is one of our redeemers. We'll come back to what that redeemer's term means in just a minute here. I'm not sure you guys covered that last week. But that's kind of where we begin in chapter 3. Kind of we've learned about this Boaz guy who's a relative and he's a redeemer. Naomi's excited about that, and here's what she says to Ruth, starting in chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative, with whose young woman you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. So what I want us to understand here is that we've kind of arrived at the end of a whole season of harvest. They've gone through two different harvests, harvest of barley and a harvest of wheat. And it's come to the end of this whole thing. And I think Naomi realizes that this season is coming to an end. Many people travel to these places to work. And after the work is done, after they've harvested, they go back to their homes. And it's likely Boaz, even though that he's kind of the owner of this plot, will likely go somewhere else too. He won't stay there when there's no harvest to be collected. And so she kind of is realizing that if she's going to sort of secure a future for herself, if she's going to secure a future for Ruth in finding a husband or finding someone who can take care of them, she's got to do it pretty soon before everybody leaves. That's kind of the season that they're in. And she reminds Ruth that Boaz is a close relative. She's reminding her that he is a redeemer. Now, this redeemer, or kinsman redeemer, as maybe some translations say, was a close relative that had a specific type of duty when it came to dealing with family. They had a duty to redeem the land of a family member that has been lost because of, you know, not being able to pay for it or having to sell it off, or it's been forfeited for some reason. Their duty was to, if they could, redeem that land, buy it back, and restore it to the family. That's the first thing. The second thing that this kinsman redeemer was had a duty to do was to restore or bring kind of security to the name of the person who owned the land. And usually that was by taking on a wife, or the wife of the widowed husband, the widowed wife, and to kind of marry her and then raise up offspring so that those offspring can carry on the name of the person. That's what a kinsman redeemer's duty was supposed to be. This is lined out in the Levitical law. So Naomi knows this man, Boaz, can do both of those things. He can redeem the land, and he can also make sure that their name is secure moving forward. He can redeem them from their circumstances. And kind of here's where this story takes a little bit of a weird, and I call it awkward, sort of turn. And Naomi gives some advice to Ruth. He's like, here's what's like, he may be leaving soon. The window is closing. Here's sort of my advice to you. Again, see, he's winnowing at, winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Here's what you should do. One more thing before we get to that. Another thing we need to understand about the harvest season, it ended at the threshing floor. What happened at the threshing floor is they would separate what was useful in their harvest to what was not useful in the harvest. Something like wheat, right? They would throw the wheat up into the air, and the wheat grain would fall down, and what's called as chaff would fly away. So they'd end up with just what they could use. And so they would do this at the end of the season, and it was usually a time of celebration. You know, it's an exciting time. They've worked all season long to kind of produce this, and now they're going to find out what they're going to take home after all this hard work that they've been doing. There's usually a big party that goes along with this. Again, people have worked hard, and each person's going to take some sort of percentage of the harvest home with them. So it's a celebratory time. It's kind of like they're having like a company party, but hopefully you don't have that guy that takes it too far at this party. And so Boaz would be at this party, and he would also stay up and stay in the threshing floor, or at the threshing floor all night, because he's worked all season for this harvest and he wants to make sure that no one would come to steal what he's worked so hard for. And so here's Naomi's advice. She knows that this is going to be a party. She knows that Boaz is going to be there all night after having partied for some time. This is what she says in verse 3. Wash therefore and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. That's Naomi's advice. If you're feeling a little bit weird about that, that's because it's a little bit weird, this advice that she's giving. In my opinion, and I think probably most of ours, that it's a little questionable, right? It's a little questionable. She wants Ruth to clean up. She's like, you know, Boaz has been seeing you for the past like 8 weeks or so, and you've usually been dirty and tired and sweaty, and you probably not smelled good because you're out there working and trying to bring home some food for us. So make sure that you clean yourself up. Make sure you look pretty. Make sure you put some perfume on. Dress nicely. Put on your best cloak. And then she says, when you do that, I want you to go to the threshing floor and wait. And wait for him to have fun at the party. Wait for him to be all merry and celebrate. And wait for him to go to bed. You know, he's had a couple, probably a couple of drinks, a couple of IPAs, and he's going to go lay down. And then go to him quietly and go to his feet and then ask him what he'd like you to do. So you got this, like, this older man who's been partying, excited about the harvest. He's had a few drinks. Wait for him to go to bed and ask him what he'd like you to do. I don't have a daughter, but that's not the advice I'd give to her. I'm hoping you wouldn't either. Sort of questionable advice, but that's the advice that she gives. And Ruth says, you know, I will do all that you say. Okay, here's how it plays out. Verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry again, probably had a couple of IPAs, he went down to lay down at the end of the heap of grain. And again, he's lying there because he's protecting his harvest from anybody who might come to steal that. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." So Ruth totally ninja skills over to him on the threshing floor at 12 a.m. after a party. And he startled, understandably, wakes up. What is going on here? Who is this woman at my feet? It is midnight. And at this point, actually, we don't have any indication that Boaz has ever been married. So, I mean, he's been widowed and has not been with a woman for a long time, and or he's never been with a woman ever. So now I've got this old guy who may not have been with a woman forever. Now there's a woman at his feet at 12 a.m. He's confused. Why is this woman laying at my feet? But Ruth says this kind of interesting phrase, "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are my redeemer." She reveals herself, "I am Ruth, I am your servant. Here's what I want you to do." And it's interesting. What she's actually doing here, she's asking sort of a question of Boaz. It's sort of like, "Hey, you know, I've thought about maybe potentially you being my husband. Have you thought about me being your wife? You kind of are this redeemer who can redeem our land and secure the family. What do you think about that? Will you take me as your wife?" A bit before 12 a.m., he's probably, you know. But here's how he responds. Verse 10, he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter." And again, this is weird. He called your daughter. "You just asked me to marry you. I'm calling your daughter." Okay, we're going to go with it. "You have made this last kindness greater than the first, and that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman." One thing I do want to point out here is I actually do fully believe that Boaz and Ruth are in love. They've observed each other. They've interacted. He has been kind. He has shown godliness. She has shown character. They've been kind of hanging around each other for about 2 months or so. That's how long the barley harvest and the wheat harvest are, about 2 months. And so they've sort of seen each other. They've watched each other work. They've seen how each other has carried themselves. They've seen kind of, is this guy legit? Do they really love the Lord? Are they really kind of following him? The work ethic, the character, the love for God, they've seen these ones, these things in the other person. And another thing too is these two probably had options, right? It wasn't like they can only marry each other. Boaz was a wealthy man. He had his own business. He owned this place, and he took the biggest portion of the harvest. So he was a wealthy man. He was a businessman. He was godly, right? There's no faults in his character that we've seen thus far, and I don't think that we'll see in the coming verses of this book. And so he probably had some options. He could probably marry a bunch of different women, or at least one of the bunch of women that would marry him. And Ruth, on the other hand, she's also held in high regard as well. Boaz says that all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. She is known as a worthy woman. This is kind of the same phrasing or the same word used to describe the Proverbs 31 woman, right? This excellent wife is the same wording used. So she's kind of a pretty good catch. Another thing too, it's clear that these two people, even before they met each other, even before they even thought about marrying each other, which was just maybe a couple minutes ago at 12 a.m., they decided that they were going to pursue the Lord first. They've decided to pursue godly character first before they even knew that this whole scenario would happen, before they even knew that marrying each other would be a possibility. It shows up in their character. It shows up in their worth ethic. It shows up in what people think about them. They've chosen to pursue the Lord even before coming together in this weird, awkward way. And so when they come together, when they think about marrying each other, they're not thinking about some of those things that are fleeting, right? Boaz is impressed. He's like, wait, you could have chosen a younger man. You could have chosen maybe a better looking man. And they could have taken care of you. And you might have been, I don't know, happier with that. But you have chosen me. And because she's looking at things beyond these fleeting qualities. She's looking at his character. And so when in coming together, even though Ruth sees him as a redeemer and he knows his duty as a redeemer is to redeem her, I think that they're not really feeling like they're forced into this marriage. I think that they're excited about this opportunity. They're excited to come together. I think they really do want to marry each other. I think they're really about to do this gladly. Like, yeah, this sounds like a really good thing. However, there is a problem. Verse 12. And now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight and in the morning. If he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until morning. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. So though, before we get to kind of that whole scenario, the new guy that we just learned about, though that was kind of a weird encounter that night, they kind of walked the tightrope of what is appropriate. There's no actual indications that anything kind of immoral or sinful went on. There's nothing in the text that would suggest that. So I think when Boaz is kind of concerned about people finding out that she was there, I think two things. First thing is, I think he's concerned about her reputation. He knows that nothing went on. She knows that nothing went on. But if people see her leaving the threshing floor after the big party, people might think something. So he makes sure that she leaves early, and he makes sure the people around her know that no one's to know about this. And the second thing, I think that he, again, Boaz is a good guy. And he wants to be the one to talk to this other redeemer himself before he finds out that something may have happened and he doesn't have his opportunity to be the redeemer. Boaz, again, is a really good guy in this. Verse 15 to 18, let's read that and then we'll kind of recap a little bit. Verse 15, and he said, bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out. So she held it out and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. That's like 60 to 80 pounds, something like that. So he's given a lot of barley to this woman. Then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. And so that's the end of chapter 3. And like, it's sort of like this crazy story unfolding. This whole last bit of this story, it's crazy. Like, anyone ever seen like a novella or like watch a novella? And you know what that is? My mom used to watch these things and probably and still does. And it's like, it's those dramatic shows that you see on like Telemundo, the Spanish channel. And it's like they pack the most amount of drama possible. Like the beginning, the end, the middle, every scene has like something dramatic happening. The dramatic scores, I don't even know how you put that many dramatic scores in one like short 30-minute show, but they somehow do it. And so I feel like this is like some sort of scene out of like a Spanish soap opera, the novella. And it's like we've got Ruth and Naomi, these two women who are widowed, and they're like, they're at the end of kind of their luck and their rope, and they have found some hope in this Boaz guy. And so she goes and has this encounter with Boaz at midnight, and they're excited about this thing. But now there's this other guy who has the right to marry her. And so at the end of this whole chapter, Naomi and Ruth know that Ruth is going to marry somebody, but she doesn't know if it's going to be Boaz or some other guy that she's never even met before. Crazy. She knows she's going to get married, but she has no idea to who. Let's jump into chapter 4 to see how this all kind of concludes. Chapter 4, verse 1. Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. Okay, so Boaz heads to the gate. This is kind of like, they didn't have like a temple or like a meeting hall or something like that. So the gate is where a lot of these transactions would happen. Lots of people would be coming through. It'd be very visible. It'd be very public. Lots of elders would be around. Elders that would kind of be overseeing this whole transaction would be around. And he waits for this other guy. And this other guy shows up. He's like, "Hey, dude, come over. I got to talk to you about something." And so he arrives. They sit down. And so Boaz, in verse 2, gathers some elders of the city. And he says, "Sit down here." So they sat down. And then he said to the Redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belongs to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one else besides you to redeem it. And I will come after you. And he said, "I will redeem it." So again, this is a public place. I got to think that like this has everything to do with Naomi and Ruth. So they might even be around for this. I'm thinking that they probably are around for this. And they're really hoping that this guy says no. And I got to think when she hears like, yes, he just said yes. Oh my gosh, her heart sinks, right? She loves Boaz. She's gotten to know Boaz. They had this like heart to heart at midnight. And it's like, I want to marry Boaz, not this random guy that we don't even get his name in the scriptures. Poor guy. And I would think her heart sank when she heard, "I will redeem it." That's not the end of the story. But Boaz adds in some more details about what this whole transaction, about what this whole thing will bring. Verse 5, then Boaz said, "The day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you will also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate his name, the name of the dead, in his inheritance." Then the Redeemer said, "I cannot redeem for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it." So he was totally ready to redeem these women or this woman. I guess he only knew about Ruth or Naomi at this point. But when he found out about, oh, wait, I've got to also marry this Ruth girl, he sort of declines his duty and he feels like it might harm his inheritance. So we don't actually have a lot of detail specifically what that means. It could mean a couple of things. He could have some older kids that he's already given an inheritance to. And so if he's to have more kids, he has to kind of figure out like, okay, I've got two more kids, but I already have two kids. And so I got to divide everything up again. He probably doesn't want to deal with that. That could be one. Or the second thing, simply put, he probably already has another wife, and bringing home wife number two may not go well with wife number one. I can understand that. So he decides, again, that he will not do this redeeming thing and passes the right to Boaz. Verse 7, now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm a transaction. One drew off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the manner of a testing in Israel. So they exchange rainbow sandal. It's all good. Verse 9, as we kind of come to the end of this. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Also Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native people. You are witnesses this day." Verse 11, then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah who built up the house of Israel." And this, I think, is amazing. So Boaz is excited about this. Boaz wants to announce this. He announces the terms that he's agreed to. He announces him taking on this wife of his. He's excited about this. He loves this woman. He says it out loud. He says it boldly. Again, this is amazing because at the beginning of this story, Ruth and Naomi, they showed up to Judah. They showed up to Bethlehem. They were like, "We don't know what we're going to do. We're poor. We can't really even do it. We have no way to provide for ourselves." And now here we have this guy proclaiming boldly that I am going to redeem these women. I'm going to take on their land. I'm going to take on Ruth because I love her, and I'm going to secure their future. And he says this boldly and loudly. And here it's in front of witnesses that they are going to be redeemed. But the redemption and the blessing doesn't just end with the marriage. It doesn't just end with the taking back of the land or the redeeming of the land. And the blessing goes beyond that. Here's what we read in verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. God blesses Ruth and Boaz with a son. And it's not just Boaz and Ruth that are blessed by this. It's not just Boaz and Ruth that are excited about this because it seals, again, their future. But Naomi is also blessed by this. It says, then the woman said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you is more to you than seven sons has given birth to him. So again, even Naomi, who started out in this story being bitter, is renewed. The land of her family is restored. The name of her household is secured in this child. And people say, and this is a super cool thing, your daughter-in-law loves you is more to you than seven sons. And during this whole time, Naomi has been frustrated, right? She's been angry. She's been bitter. She's been feeling neglected. She's been crying out of loneliness. She's been thinking about these men that used to be in her life that she no longer has anymore. She's kind of at the end of herself, right? But standing next to her the whole time was this woman who loved her. This woman who never abandoned her. And even now in this child, this woman, Ruth, is sharing this blessing of this child with her. And she's kind of almost has this kind of newness about her, this kind of new life about her and a new purpose. Verse 16, then Naomi took the child and laid him over her lap and became his nurse. And when the woman of the neighborhood, gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi, they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So I think here we think about this story of Ruth and Naomi. It begins in this tragedy where they lose husbands. They lose being able to provide for themselves. They're like going to lose their land. They're going to lose their family name. They're going to lose their inheritance. They're going to lose all these different things. It begins with tragedy, but here at the end of the story, it ends in triumph. And the triumph goes beyond this one child. The triumph goes beyond Ruth chapter 4. If we take a look at the genealogy of Jesus, which I don't think I have on the slides, I should have put that in. When we look at the genealogy of Jesus, we see this Obed, son of Boaz and Ruth. And so God takes this tragic story. He brings in, introduces this guy named Boaz, this redeemer, and he redeems these two women, and then he brings a child to these two women, and he uses this child to bless them, but then he uses this child to bless everybody in adding them into the lineage of Christ. You know, when I think about this story, when I look at this story, I think it's really our story. Again, Ruth was at the end of herself. She was poor, husbandless. She was without a way to provide for herself, but God again brings Boaz into the picture and brings hope and restoration and security. He restores her and God blesses her again, not only with a redeemer, but with a hope for the future. And when we think about us, like none of us really know or can see what God is doing. Sometimes we don't even see what God is doing like in our present time or presentness. We don't know kind of what a conversation, we don't know what an act of love, we don't know what's an act of courage, we don't know what a timely gift, what a timely blessing will do for the future. We don't know what's going to happen based on the choices that we make, but here's what we can like trust and know, that God can take some of those things from our lives and magnify it times a thousand. In the redemptive story of Ruth, she conceives Obed and again has a place in the lineage of our Savior, Jesus. And listen, and when God comes and redeems us through Jesus on the cross, we are not only are redeemed fully ourselves, but then we get the opportunity to play a role in God's redemptive plan in our worlds, in this world, in our workplaces, everywhere that we go. We are redeemed people playing a role in God's redemptive story. Ruth's story is our story. So I'd like to sort of end there and just kind of pose a couple of few questions as we enter into some discussion groups. And the first one being, has God ever used unfortunate circumstances in your life to bless you or others? How so? Have you been in a place in your life where you don't understand what's going on, you don't know why you are where you are, but somehow you look back on it and like, wow, God really used that to bless me, to grow me, to shape me, or to bless or grow somebody else close to me? Second question, do you feel like you have a role in God's redemptive plan? How so? So as we think about being redeemed people, we are invited to play a role in God's redemptive plan. How do you see yourself doing that? How can we do that? And the last question, I think, just in thinking about just real, some real practical stuff, do you know someone in need of encouragement or blessing? And how can you be the person to do that for them this week? Who do you know that's maybe in a Ruth or Naomi spot? Who do you know that's struggling? Who do you know that's hurting? Who do you know that just needs an encouraging word? Or maybe something tangible you can provide. And how can you be that blessing to them? Should I pray and break us or just break?
Pray and break.
All right, Father, we... gosh, again, we thank you for your word. And although things we find there are sometimes confusing or hard to understand or are foreign to us, Lord, you use your word to teach us about life, to teach us about you, to teach us about how we should live, God. We pray that we would learn from this story, that we would learn from the character of Ruth, we would learn from the character of Boaz, we would learn to trust you, and we would learn that we are a blessed, redeemed people who are agents of blessing, who are agents of hope, and who are agents who bring redemption to people around us. God, I pray just for the time we have to chat and to discuss farther. May you again just be revealing yourself more to us in these moments. Praise all in Jesus' name. Amen. Break.
Did I make it awkward?
No, it's totally easy.
No, that's perfect.
Okay,
so great job.